Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. When Thomas Quinlan was named police chief for the Columbus Division of Police in December, the 30-year veteran, or nearly 30-year veteran of the force, who spent 11 months as the interim chief, talked of a new beginning.
We've only just begun on a path of progress designed to make Columbus safer, to ensure members of the community feel they have a voice in the service we provide, and to know they can worry more about what they can do for their neighbor rather than what harm their neighbor might do to them.
Quinlan was chosen over an outside candidate after the first national search in division history. He earned key support from the police union, the NAACP, and others, but some, including some local faith leaders, did not embrace the selection. Coming up, we'll hear from Chief Quinlan himself. Columbus Dispatch reporter Bethany Bruner covers crime and the Columbus Division of Police, and we welcome her back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
As interim chief, Quinlan abolished the vice unit. Refresh our memory about what led up to that and what, you know, why.
Right. Well, the Columbus vice unit really started coming under fire in July of 2018. When they arrested Stephanie Clifford, who most people would know as Stormy Daniels, at a strip club that she was performing at that evening. That case made international headlines within hours.
Because of her relationship with the president.
Correct. And, you know, that really, the charges were dismissed within hours. So that really put the spotlight on that unit. About a month and a half later, then, an undercover vice officer, Andrew Mitchell, shot and killed a woman, Donna Castleberry, who was working as a prostitute on the west side. He was working undercover, did not have his badge or his radio. He's now facing federal charges for unrelated crimes and that he's accused of committing, and then state-level charges for the shooting of Ms. Castleberry. And after that all happened, the spotlight was even brighter on that unit. So when Chief Quinlan was named interim chief in early 2019, he then took steps to abolish that unit and just say, you know what, we're just going to start with a clean slate. There's clearly something going on here. The FBI was looking into the unit. You know, it's time for a clean start.
That was, on its face, seemed appeared gutsy or risky or something like that, as an interim to take such a bold move.
Yes, absolutely. I think anytime you're in an interim position, it can be very challenging to make significant change because there is that question of whether or not you are going to remain in that position and whether or not that change will then be reversed if somebody else is brought in.
It will take while you're interim.
Exactly.
Since no one's sure whether you're going to stay or not.
Exactly.
So how did it take hold, the changes?
You know,
how did they?
I think they were met overall with a lot of positive reaction within the division. I think there was some desire within the division to see change. I think there was kind of the, you know, these guys are kind of doing whatever they want. And so having somebody step in and say, you know what, enough is enough, we're done, you know, and then a couple months later when the chief did his reorganization of the division, I think that was also met with a very welcome overall. It was just very welcomed by the division.
How did he reorganize it? What was the overarching principle of what he did?
Well, I think it was just, you know, bringing a fresh perspective and really looking at changing the mission of the division. You know, for a lot of police departments, it's about serve and protect. And I think Chief Quinlan is very much about, we're here to serve. We're here to serve the community. We're here to provide a service for them. But we're also here to build those relationships and make sure everybody's having the best experience they can in this city that they call home.
And how was that taken? I mean, how did that take hold? Did it make a difference to just say to change the mission statement? Did the mission actually change?
I think to a certain degree, we're working in that direction. You know, one of the things he did soon after that was bring on the therapy dog unit. And I think that unit in particular has been very well received by the community. I mean, how can you not love cute dogs?
A dog. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are going to be talking with the new chief of police coming up later in the program. Right now, I'm talking with Columbus Dispatch crime and police reporter Bethany Bruner about Chief Quinlan and his work during the 11 months as when he was interim police chief. Coming up later in the program, if you have a question or comment for Chief Quinlan, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I was surprised that this was the first national search for a new chief in division history. I mean, I've been living in town for 30 years, and I guess it should have resonated with me before, but it seems like a big enough, it's obvious it's the biggest department in the state. They would have looked nationally in the past.
You would think that, but the way that the union contract had been set up prior, that wasn't something that the city was able to do. The union contract specifically laid out that it had to be somebody from within. And the city actually, in anticipation of former Chief Kim Jacobs retiring, had actually gone through the arbitration process to get that contract changed so that they did have this option on the table, and they now have this option on the table moving forward for any subsequent searches. You know, we are the 14th largest department in the country, and, you know, the city kind of saw it as, we want to have all of our options on the table. There might be somebody who's fantastic that's out there that will bring a fresh perspective from outside, but we'll never know if this contract stays the way it is.
And yet they did end up staying with someone on the inside. What do we know about how the mayor justified that decision? What did he say to explain himself?
Well, the mayor, in the press conference where he formally introduced Chief Quinlan as the chief, he said, you know, we looked outside, and essentially it's like we came down to, this is somebody who is in our own backyard, who understands this city and this community and the challenges that are facing this department, and can hit the ground running to change some of those things, and has already been headed in that direction. And, you know, the clip you played earlier, you know, we've only just begun. I think that really is how the mayor sees things as well, that, you know, Chief Quinlan had an 11-month head start, and now he's really going to be able to take this department by the reins. And
I guess, you know, there's an advantage and a disadvantage of being in place, and he made the right decision in going forward with change.
Yes, and I think he really showed in those 11 months that he was willing to take those risks, and I think that the mayor saw that as somebody, you know, the mayor had from the jump of this search had said he was looking for a change agent. That had been the term that he had used. And I think as an interim, Chief Quinlan really showed he was willing to make those changes and become that agent of change and try and do what he can do to make this division, you know, even more of a banner holder for the country.
A special report in August outlined a problem with racial bias and the use of excessive force by police within communities of color. I feel like the same report could come out about any big city police department in the country. And I'm wondering, how has the chief responded to that?
Well, the chief has acknowledged, and when the Matrix report did come out, said, you know, there are issues. I don't think that comes as a shock to very many people, that there are issues. I think this report kind of laid it all out there. And put the dirty laundry on the clothesline and said, you know, this is what the statistics are showing us. And I think the chief has said, you know, this isn't okay. This isn't acceptable. And we've got to change some things.
And what is he changing?
Well, I think that's still to be determined how exactly that's going to change. I know one of the things when Chief Quinlan was formally announced, he said, you know, there are certain things you can't really do as an interim, because you don't know if you're going to have that permanence of the job. Mm-hmm. You don't know if you're going to have that ability and if they're going to stick. And so you want to make sure that if you're going to be implementing a change and doing things that are going to make the division more open, more diverse, that they really are going to stick. That's not something you want to be taken away, you know, 5 months later. You really want to have that permanence behind it.
Any sense about what those things are?
Not yet. I mean, you know, the chief had about 2 weeks before the start of 2019 to really become the permanent chief, and the holidays were in there. So I think, you know, now as we start 2020, that we're really going to see some of the things that he's outlining, and maybe he'll discuss some of those with you later.
You know, the report has been that reaction to the decision to appoint Thomas Quinlan, Columbus chief of police, the reaction ranged from happy to wait and see, guarded optimism, I guess, to outright criticism, particularly among leaders, faith leaders in the community. What are the critics saying?
Well, a lot of the critics and, you know, some of the folks that I've spoken to within the faith community have said, you know, there is no way to change a division that has some of the racial problems that they see from within, that Chief Quinlan is just part of the status quo. He has been part of the division for 30 years. And if he hasn't changed anything within those 30 years, what's going to be different now? And, you know, you had somebody from outside in Perry Tarrant, who's a former assistant chief in Seattle, had worked in Tucson, Arizona. And he is an African-American. And I think a lot of people that within the faith community saw somebody who had shared life experience and shared experience with law enforcement that they thought could bring a fresh perspective versus somebody that had been kind of brought up through mm-hmm. the ranks with the system that they saw as being incredibly flawed.
And did the mayor address that?
The mayor addressed that. Safety Director Ned Pettis addressed that during that press conference. They made it very clear that, you know, racism within the division is not going to be tolerated, that there is no room for bias. There is no room for any discrimination, whether it's racial, sexual, yeah, anything. It's not.
I know they say that. Everybody knows they say that. Who's going to say otherwise?
Of course. Of course. And I think with Quinlan in place now, you're able to see, and we'll be seeing in the future, you know, they're going to be taking these complaints seriously. And I know one of the things when I talked with the faith leaders is they said that the people that they had talked to who had experienced discrimination didn't want to come forward. They didn't want to talk to Quinlan because he was interim, because he was part of that status quo. Well, now that he's got that permanent position and mm-hmm. this is who you're going to be dealing with for the next 5, possibly 10 years.
Which is the length of his first contract, 5 years. Yeah.
Right. You know, now you can actually come forward with those complaints. Now you can start that process of addressing some of those issues. You can't address issues if you don't know specifically what they are. You can talk about them in a broad sense. But if you don't know specifically where the problems are, then, you know, now this gives them a chance to say, OK, we have problems here, here and here. What are you going to do about it? Let's sit down at the table and let's fix that.
What about the wait and see guarded optimism people? What are they watching for?
I think they're really trying to see, will there be change? We've heard a lot of, you know, lip service about there's going to be change. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And I think it's wait and see if it's actually going to happen. You know, I think we as a culture are very much accustomed now to politicians or leaders in the community saying things to get where they're going to get. Mm-hmm. And then maybe it doesn't actually happen. So I think there's a lot of this all sounds great, but will we actually see this materialize in the future?
You know, going back to the changes, the reorganization of the division and also the abolishment of the vice squad, mm-hmm. Is there any sense that it's improved or not made any ultimate difference in the outcomes of the vice operations?
I think there is some improvement. The new Police and Community Together, the PAC team that they have created, the approach that they are taking now with these sorts of complaints, with the prostitution stings that they're doing, really, you know, I had the opportunity to go out and observe what they're doing. And they're bringing these women in and sitting down and talking with them before they, you know, take them to jail or what to rehab or wherever it might be that they need to go, but talking about how did they get here? What are their immediate issues? Do they need, you know, food? They have food there for them. They have a meal for them. So they're, you know, it's not
treating them like human beings.
They're treating them like human beings. And Deputy Chief Jennifer Knight, who oversees that that unit, really that's her big focus is these are humans.
How did, I'm pretty sure you were on the team that did the Sullivan Avenue
yes.
Report series. How did Chief Quinlan, interim at the time, respond to that report? It can't be anything new to them.
Right. It's exactly that. It's nothing new to them. This is not a surprise to anyone in the leadership.
The destitution, the vice
Right. The squalor that a lot of people are allowing themselves to live in, whether that's because of addiction or poverty or issues beyond their control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the overall response we got was, thank you. Thank you for bringing this into the spotlight, because we've been saying this forever. We've been saying this for years, and nobody believes us when we say it's this bad. Mm-hmm. Nobody believes us, you know, when we are asking for money or donations or, you know, people to care about this. They're like, oh, you know, it's not my corner of the community. Why mm-hmm. should I care? Mm-hmm. And to have that spotlight put on that corridor, that 3-mile stretch of Sullivan Avenue, that statistically is the worst in the city in almost every category mm-hmm. that you could come up with. They really were appreciative of that because it reinforced what they've been saying.
Okay. Bethany Bruner, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's Bethany Bruner. She covers crime and police for the Columbus Dispatch. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Columbus Chief of Police, Thomas Quinlan. He was appointed in about mid-December after serving 11 years in an interim post as chief. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. After an 11-month stint as interim police chief and nearly 30 years on the force, Thomas Quinlan in December was appointed chief of the Columbus Division of Police. Chief Quinlan, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back, Ann.
We have heard and read that some members of the faith community are critical of your appointment.
Sure.
I don't think they're personally critical of you, but they wanted someone from outside.
I understand.
How do you respond to that?
I respect everyone's viewpoints because the community has certain expectations and what they want to see in the services that they deliver. And the bottom line is, I was selected. It's my responsibility now. I'm going to serve everyone's interest, you know, whether they have that, you know, same support or not. I'm going to make sure that I'm responsive to them.
Has anybody come to talk to you from among that group to just share their concerns personally with you now that you're installed?
We're working on setting up meetings with several people right now, and I'm looking to create a chief's advisory panel that the mayor and the city council members select people of their choosing who meet with me regularly and advise me and have access to use of force investigations and citizen complaints and can have an extra layer of review on there because we want to be open and transparent. We're really typically proud of the work product we produce, and I want to make sure people see that. If they have questions that, hey, this should have been done different, or we don't think you ask enough questions here, then we can just make the process better and more responsive to the community.
I was surprised. I didn't understand something in the bargaining agreement with the union prevented the city from going outside and doing a national search. And so after all these years, finally that provision is struck and they can go outside and look for something different, maybe
sure.
someone just from the outside. It's understandable in a way that some people are frustrated.
It's understandable, this frustration. The bottom line is, no matter who has this job, we have to address those frustrations and be responsive. And that's what I'm going to do, just like anyone else from the outside that would have come in would have done the same thing.
What do you think, where do you get what you need to have to make the changes going forward? Where did you get that skill set from, coming from inside the department as you have?
Well, there's been numerous outside mentors I've had. I went to the FBI National Academy, and it's about 265 people, police professionals from all around the world, literally all around the world, and interacting, getting ideas and sharing stories with how did you deal with this and what frustrated you about that, or how did you resolve this? Then I also went through a Major City Chiefs Police Executive Leadership Institute, where we have mentors like Charles Ramsey, who's kind of the creator, the author of the 21st century policing guidelines. And so I had mentors like that, and Adam Palmer up in Vancouver, British Columbia. I actually traveled there under this program and worked with him for a week and his entire staff, and learning how they tackle problems and how similar they are to the problems we tackle. So there's been a lot of outside influence that's helped me prepare for this role.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Thomas Quinlan. He's the new Columbus Chief of Police. He was made the appointment. The appointment was made in mid-December after he served as interim police chief for 11 months. He's been with the department for about 27 years preceding that, I think, there and abouts. He's been a police officer for 30 years. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Harland in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Harland.
Hi, longtime listener. Real excited to be on. I guess the thing that struck me as notable was the gentleman, your guest, he wanted to kind of set a clean slate. And I just feel like one of the things that a lot of communities around the country are feeling with their police departments is that there's two separate justice systems for people who, you know, are living in their community, and then the officers who sometimes, unfortunately, themselves don't abide by those same laws. So I guess my question is, what can be done to bridge the gap between those two standards of justice? I mean, I think a lot of people across the country are, like, tired of hearing about police officers who end up with desk jobs or, you know, demotions or paid vacations. And so I guess I can take my question or my answer off air. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your question. And it is a very insightful viewpoint that there are two standards. The reality is when public engages in criminal activity, that's the police responsibility to confront that and bring that person before the court and let them decide how to resolve that and follow due process. The same is true for officers. What I'm doing different with officers is, number one, I created a public corruption task force assigned to the FBI. They're direct reports to the chief of police, so they don't report to anyone in the division but me. They work at the FBI office, and they conduct criminal investigations. So I can forward them investigative concerns, and they can take it from there using the resources of the FBI and using federal criminal statutes. So there's a big hammer there.
And that's new?
That's new. That's something I created, one of the first things I created. And we've already been using them. We've already seen results from that. I've also made it clear that I'm going to change how we do some of the use of force investigations, that we're going to take some of those out of the chain of command and have internal affairs actually conduct those from a neutral, disinterested viewpoint versus someone in the chain of command, just to create, again, a layer of transparency and someone who isn't closely aligned with that subordinate. So we're going to do that. I've also made it clear that I'm not going to offer leave forfeiture, where he's talking about, you know, paid vacation or whatever. I'm not
going to desk jobs, that
desk
kind of
job.
A thing.
Yeah, I'm not going to offer leave forfeiture the way it has in the past. I'm going to deliver suspensions more often. Which, when I do that, they have to go to the director of public safety, and he'll make the ultimate call. Mm-hmm. But if I give leave forfeiture, then it's done. They give up some leave time, and that's their discipline. I'm not going to do that unless the mitigation is really substantial. I'm going to deliver suspensions, let them go talk to the director and explain why they find themselves in this situation. And if it involves a situation of racism, discrimination, anything along those lines, it's going to be an automatic, there's no progressive discipline. It's going to be critical misconduct, and it's going straight to the director as a suspension, and they'll have to explain to him why they engaged in that conduct.
These kind of things are responses to an existing culture that's been generated over decades and decades. It's way before you were born, probably. And I'm wondering, how do you start to change the genesis? You know, how do you go back to the beginning and start to change the makeup of the force so that these aren't issues that are popping up on these surveys?
Well, I think a big part of it is being self-aware and making others aware and bringing in the right training. It's hard to undo what has been developed as a culture in the past, but you can set expectations, standards for the present and for the future where you want to go, and making it clear that this type of conduct that we're just mentioning is critical conduct, and it's going to result in a suspension. No lesser discipline, no leave forfeiture. It's going to be a suspension, which means the officer loses seniority, the officer loses pay, and it can also then be used to progress to termination.
Have you gotten any feedback from the union, for example, or anybody else about this new policy?
You know, I have regularly spoken with members of the union, and I don't think anybody wants officers that are engaged in misconduct, because it affects not just officers in Columbus, but officers around the country. Anything we have that occurs negative like that impacts all of us. So we're all committed to trying to get right any wrong. But they have an obligation to try to make sure we reach our standard of just cause, which, just like a defense attorney, has to make sure the prosecution, you know, matches their burden of proof. We have to do the same thing, and we do that.
John in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you? And congratulations to Chief Quinlan on his recent appointment.
Thank you, John.
Thank you. I'm one of those African-American clergy people that was happy to see the chief's appointment.
Thank you.
I mean, even though we got some fallback in the community for that, but we realized why our community was angry and at some things. But our experience, for those of us that are in play a role of advocacy, we worked with Tom Quinlan. We worked with the mayor of Columbus, and we found that they invited us to the table for the process, for the purpose of advocating. We pushed, they pushed back, we pushed back some more, and we found that they were interested in helping to change the culture and to bring about better relations between the general community and the police department.
How so?
Well, first of all, the conversation and being invited, number one, okay, to advocate is a
Is it
a
that
change.
Big of a deal really, just to be invited to a conversation? Is that a big change?
Well, it is, because usually you have to kick down the door and make a lot of noise. That wasn't necessarily, we did not have to get that aggressive. And the mayor and his staff, as well as the police department, said, okay, come in. And we worked and we pushed and we worked on everything from body cameras, from everything from wanting to see something happen within the vice unit, from wanting to see an officer fired that was fired. And then we started dealing with an issue that a lot of people don't talk about, and you brought it up as it relates to the police union, which is the FOP.
Mm-hmm.
What the community is really angry with is some of the terms, some of the provisions within the FOP contract, the contract that police union has negotiated on behalf of their employees that for 10, 20 years or so. And the community refuses to hold those accountable that negotiated on the other side of that contract. But that's a big issue. That being an issue, that the union isn't as visible, but a police chief and a mayor is. So they take on a lot of the hits. But we haven't experienced anything but a great amount of, I believe, sincere intentions and cooperation from the city. They dismantled the vice unit in the city, as well as constructed a skeleton that they can put some meat on.
Let me ask you, John, just before I let you go, tell me what is your last name? You're president of the Interdenominational Ministerial Alliance. Who are you?
Yes, John Coates.
Okay, great.
And
All right.
and And I'm also an executive member of the NAACP.
Okay.
I mean, there were people that were in the African-American community that got really angry because some of our leaders, including the president of the NAACP, I sit on the executive committee of the mm-hmm. NAACP as well, and because we took a picture with the then acting chief of police at an NAACP event, mm-hmm. and some of the rhetoric was violent and unnecessary. It was just unnecessary. Mm-hmm.
Well, John, thank you so much for calling us. I appreciate your time today. Thanks for listening as well.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. The racial divide outlined in the community forums and the Matrix report kind of laid it all out. It wasn't a surprise to a lot of people, you know, anyway. Obviously, there's divides within the African-American community, as John just described.
Sure.
There's nothing uniform about any group of people in this city, all things being equal. When I hear, you know, John say that they had to, you know, felt, I'm sure he was being figurative, but not, you know, knocking down the door to get to the chief of police before. Is it really that much of a departure what you're doing?
People don't expect an answer immediately when they ask for someone, but they expect to be responsive.
Okay.
When you're responsive and you talk to them and say, let me find out that information, I'll get back to you, and then you get back to them, you make people feel that their concerns and their opinions, their viewpoints have value, and they're to be taken seriously. And I think that's the difference. Like I said, people don't expect you to answer the phone and be able to give them an answer right off the top of your head to something. But they expect you to answer the phone and tell them you'll look into it and get back to them. And that's what I do.
Okay. My guest is Columbus Chief of Police Thomas Quinlan. We have him for the rest of the hour. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking with the new chief of the Columbus Division of Police, Thomas Quinlan. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Mayor Ginther set a goal of doubling diversity in the police and fire divisions. I'm not sure what we mean by doubling, doubling in what way, doubling in people of color, doubling in gender, but be that as it may, you know, the issue of a lack of diversity is a problem across the country in police forces. How are you really doing things differently? That's another thing that we hear over and over and over again. We're going to make the department more diverse, but it just never seems to, it's a goal that never seems to be achieved.
Every agency is dealing with this issue. What we're doing locally is developing relationships. It's hard to get someone, and especially their family members who may be guiding them away from policing, to get people supportive to join policing when they have a bad experience. So who wants to go to a restaurant where they had a bad experience? You've picked someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to apply for a position where they have nothing but bad experiences? So one, we're starting at the elementary and middle school level to try to look, you know, 10 years down the road, where can we be? So we're starting a mobile clue program with partnering with COSI, which is going to be exhibits that we bring in, police forensic-related exhibits, you know, technology-type things, science-based, STEM-based. So what we're going to do is try to build relationships when they're very impressionable and kids in the Columbus Public Schools to have good, positive interactions. I've created a youth services program where we're going to engage youth and boys and girls clubs and rec centers and after-school programs. We have a public safety cadet program, and we're working with the schools to create a pre-cadet program where they have a like a criminal justice program in high school, and then we look at those individuals to recruit them to a cadet program from 18 to 21, where we pay them and train them and prepare them for a police applicant, and then hopefully they become a police officer.
Like, so it's internships?
It's basically like a paid internship. We're letting them do, you know, a lot of police duties. They ride with police officers. In fact, the latest officer-involved shooting we had just last week, the officer had a cadet with him. So they're out there on the street with officers and seeing what it's like to be in police work and hopefully developing that passion for policing. And we have about 72% diversity in that program.
What are you finding are the challenges there?
Well, the challenges are, again, is a years past of not having good relationships where people want to be a part of the organization and the profession. People may want to do public service, but they're going to pick maybe corrections or social work or something else.
I see.
To be involved in public service or fire, but not policing necessarily, because if they don't have a good experience, they don't necessarily want to be a part of that. We're changing that dynamic and creating a lot of positive interactions on a daily basis. So hopefully when they become 21 and can apply to become a police officer, they have that, they take that passion for public service and direct it towards policing. And we're looking at, you know, diversity in that regard.
There's other ways to approach diversity. You and I, when we spoke last, I asked you about the policy against police officers, female police officers wearing headscarves, hijabs, that kind of a thing. You said that it was something that you were willing to look at. Have you looked at that? Is that still on the plate? Is that on a plate anywhere?
It is. Actually, funny, I have a list here. I met with all general staff, which are commanders and deputy chiefs today, and I have a list of 70 items here that I want to work on in the next through 2020 and into early 2021. And on my list is where do we stand in on the hijab, and what's the right way to introduce that without opening up other issues that are unintended consequences. So that is on my plan to look at this year.
Let's get to some calls here. Let's see. David in Mount Sterling, you're on the air. Hi, David.
Good morning, Ann. I want to ask Chief Quinlan. I lived in Texas for a couple years, and they had open carry there, and we always seemed, and I was with law enforcement there for a while, and it seemed like it got fought good with the people, and they felt protected. And I wonder how he feels about open carry, and also about the license plate situation, where down in Texas, we only had one license plate, and we controlled our crime and everything. And then, like I said, on the open carry, where the situation was, the people did that, and everybody thought in Texas we was like the old West, but we didn't have much crime with it either. And I just want his opinions on that, and I will hang up and listen for the answers.
All right, David. So two issues. Open carry, of course, talking about guns.
Correct. Thanks, Dave, for the question. Again, guns and license plates are both fairly political issues right now, and I remain very apolitical. I will give you concerns that we have. I think there's plenty of crime in Texas, just like everywhere else in the United States right now, especially around gun violence. The issue isn't so much open carry or the access to weapons. It's the propensity to use weapons, the ease of access to weapons by people who are in a trauma situation or a crisis event and don't have the years and years of training that police officers have or attorneys or other people that know what the parameters are, when you can display the weapon, when you can use the weapon for self-defense, what the law is in that state on whether you have a stand your ground law or anything else, and how you apply that, or issues of just around the simple value of human life. As police officers, we're accountable for every round that we discharge and where that round goes. I think, you know, people need to just be careful of knowing that they may be making other people very apprehensive about having a weapon present. It's one thing to have a pistol in a holster open carry. It's another thing when you see people walk around with a rifle slung around their shoulder, walk around Walmart, just based on national events, it raises some people's anxiety and makes other people feel comfortable that they're there. So it's just something to be appreciating, again, the value of all perspectives and trying to find where we can, you know, coexist and not elevate fears and alleviate fears. On the license plate, I think certainly anything we can do to make officers more efficient in their job is a good thing, and having a front license plate helps officers more rapidly identify someone as they pass, and they can be running that tag while they're turning around trying to catch up. If there's a need to interact with a car, make sure they got the right car that's aired as a suspect out of a robbery or something. So it makes officers more efficient. We can certainly do our job either way, but again, it's very important to be efficient, and I think that helps us be efficient.
Going back to that issue of how people appear as officers, Mohammed in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Mohammed.
Hi. Congratulations first to the new police chief. And
Thank you, sir.
One quick question is, I'm a young African-American male. I'm Muslim, too. And at a certain time, I was interested in joining the police force. But I have facial hair. I have a beard for religious reasons. And I wanted to know, What is your plans tackling that type of issue? Because we did have the former police chief come over to our mosque over here at the west side of Columbus, the AAIC mosque, and we did touch about that, and he said he was going to look and see what type of laws that the police chief in Minnesota and the ones in New York have used to bring about that law. So I just wanted to get your opinion and see what you thought about that.
Yeah, and Mohammed, thank you so much for that call. And I apologize for not bringing up that issue when I brought up the headscarf issue. What about that, and why? What is the deal with facial hair? Why are officers, police, not allowed to have facial hair?
Well, many agencies are going to that route. In fact, Houston Police Chief Art Acevedo just released a new policy today, I believe, on facial standards, hair standards. And one, it's a professional appearance issue.
Kind of dated, though, maybe?
It is kind of dated. People, we actually had a survey recently. I think I saw a survey where 68% of the people said they don't really care whether someone has facial hair or not. It does impair a person's ability to function as a police officer requirements, because we have to wear gas masks in certain events. Mm-hmm. And when you wear that, you can't get a proper seal. And so that means that person is not able to go into a contaminated environment, which takes them out of the lineup, which is problematic for us, that people aren't able to work in contaminated environments where we're using chemical agents or something to control.
Like a meth lab kind of a thing? Or
it could be a meth lab. It could be a crowd control situation where there's, angry protests going on. We have to use tear gas. So it creates some concerns for us. It is something that we're obviously understand that there are cultural and religious preferences around the wearing of facial hair, hijab, and other religious garments. But I think we want police to be as uniform and neutral looking as possible, so they don't identify, you know, winners or losers.
Except that that uniformity favors a certain majority.
Yeah, so you could certainly argue that there are agencies now that are we had an officer tragically killed in Texas wore a turban. So it's not something that isn't being tested around the country, but I think it's something that we have to proceed carefully on and make good decisions that are best for this community.
Mohammed, thanks for that call. Paul in Columbus, you're on the air with Columbus Chief of Police Thomas Quinlan. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi, Ann and Chief Quinlan. The reason I'm calling is because I want to ask if you are aware of the epidemic of people being run down on the Ohio State University campus area. I was walking down High Street, crossing Northwood, and the sign said "Walk." And a distracted driver ran me down and has fractured my kneecap.
Mm. I'm sorry to hear that, Paul.
Well, okay. My question, Chief, is someone does that, isn't it reckless driving?
Well, there's certainly laws that control distracted driving. fail to yield to pedestrian in a crosswalk. There are laws that can be enforced, but there are traffic laws that, again, we can cite for and send them to court, and then a judge will make the decision on what the right remedy is for that.
Do you agree with Paul that it's an epidemic, though?
I don't personally characterize an epidemic. I get a daily email on anything that like that that happens, and I don't see that in my inbox.
Obviously,
every day.
It's probably the most pedestrian traffic you have anywhere in the city on a daily basis.
It's definitely heavily populated, and there's a lot of pedestrian violations. In fact, the majority of pedestrian collisions, certainly maybe not in Paul's from what he described, but in many cases, it is the pedestrian jaywalking or at fault in it. And again, I've never heard a pedestrian say, yeah, I saw the car coming, I walked out in front of it anyways.
Right.
They don't say that. They say, I didn't even see it coming. Yet they still are the ones who crossed in their path and created the situation.
Paul, good luck with that knee. Is it Nayla or Nyla?
Yep. I just want to put my two cents in. Many women are probably hesitant about going into enforcement simply because it's been that way for millions of years. I know that when I first started working, again, as an intern, I came in when it was actually illegal for women to have field positions with Corps of Engineers out on the water. I know I got greeted within the first week with 100 pounds of hawser line in the face.
I'm sorry,
if
what?
If you go in, 100 pounds of line in your face, it knocks you over into the water.
Okay, but this was, is this for police off? Police
no,
force?
This is enforcement. When you're trying to recruit folks, what you might want to do is target the younger audience. So when the kids come in, they don't get the he-man type of attitude mm-hmm. that is tending to be prevalent among enforcement agents, and it doesn't matter who. It could be customs, INS, it could be cops, it could okay. be troopers. When you're recruiting for these interns coming in, it's something that if you start them out where the entire age class comes in with a non-He-Man attitude, not only do you get more discussive type relations with the general public, you might tend to be a little bit less aggressive towards the general public because women mostly aren't.
Nyla, I don't mean to cut you off, but we are running out of time, and I wanted to give Chief Quinlan a chance to respond to that.
Well, I certainly hope to believe that we've made tremendous progress from any experiences that have occurred in the past. I know there's been a lot of details of bad encounters people have had. I think we're making real progress at welcoming everyone into the police profession. And again, I certainly think it's easier to change the culture and policy and practices from within an organization than it is sometimes from outside. So we welcome everyone to apply to the Division of Police. Application will be open in July. We have cadet programs that will be coming. Application will be opening before that, sometime early this spring. So we welcome everyone into and make that change from within.
Nyla, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. We're just about out of time, but I did want to ask you about language barriers and the issues of that and what this force is doing to address that problem.
We have obviously access to a language line where we can make sure that we can be responsive to everyone who has need to contact the police. We have access in the street to be able to bring officers over that have language ability or to get them in touch with people who can translate for us. But it is in Central Ohio, it's an ongoing concern that we don't have enough people who are bilingual, who know sign language, or other ways of communicating with individuals. I think the text to 911 and stuff is helping take care of some of that.
Uh-huh. So people don't
improving.
Have to be calling. They can
can text in if there's a barrier. So I think there's some ways that we are improving there, but there's a wide opening there to make more improvement.
Well, Thomas Quinlan, congratulations on your appointment as Chief of Police. I appreciate you taking the time to come in and talk about it today. I hope you'll come again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime you want.
That's Thomas Quinlan. He is the new Columbus Chief of Police. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.